The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
When they used the venom on me, they would show me pictures of my life. At first, they all blurred together, but now... Now I can sort them out a little. Like the ones that they changed, they have this quality. It's like they're shiny. They've been glossed over.
You should get some rest.
You're still trying to protect me. Real or not real?
Real. That's what you and I do. Keep each other alive.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today, somewhat of a special edition, finishing up our discussion of the Hunger Games films. We will be talking about a recent release, Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, 2015's Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, directed by Francis Lawrence. If you're interested in listening to our previous Hunger Games podcasts, before you do that, you can always go to loosecannons.net, loosecannons.net, and make sure you get the spelling right, because apparently we have a new competitor on iTunes. With a new project, and her podcasting voice is better than ours, so don't get fooled by the good voice. Come to us, the bad voices.
Bad voices, also, good movies.
That but also, she apparently didn't do any research and just named her podcast whatever, and didn't see that there was a podcast that has 70-something episodes that's been going on since 2013 that has the same name as her. So thanks, lady.
And there's another podcast with two N's, but there's apparently a production company called Loose Cannons Productions, and all they do is podcast movies made by that production company.
Oh, the Cannon Group.
I think that one's already over, though.
Well,
they made like three and
I'm pretty positive that our podcast will crush all the others with pure quality.
Speaking of, we've got some new commenters on the website. I wanted to give a shout out to them. Nobody, despite your name, we appreciate you. And I think it's, I don't know how to pronounce it. It looked like USA Rings and then a number.
Also 94.
Joined in on the website, 94, to give us some commentary. And I won't give them a shout out because they haven't made any comments, but I noticed that there's some lurkers upvoting comments, and maybe they don't want to be shouted out. Maybe that's why they haven't commented. But I see you, and I appreciate you for lurking on our website.
Keep lurking, guys.
Lurking.
Yeah. Lurk it up.
Normally I say before we do that, let's do this, but that's not, there's no transitionary moment for me to say that. So, heralds and denouncements, everybody.
Let's herald.
I am going to... trying to remember what movie I was going to denounce. I had it in my brain, and I... Oh, since this will probably be coming out afterwards, I'm going to denounce Roller Boogie.
Piling on the Roller Boogie train.
Yeah, I was really excited about this movie. 5 minutes in, I was like, wow, this movie's kind of vibrant and crazy and fun. And then it took a real hard nosedive when the plot kicked in. I was like, oh, this plot's kind of gross, and all these characters are also kind of gross, and the dialogue's really bad, and the acting is really bad, and the dancing even falls off after that too. Like the roller dancing is really pretty bland after the opening. So real big disappointment there. I was hoping also to figure out whether or not Mark L. Lester was actually one of the greatest cinematic trolls of all time, or if he was just a gun for hire, and I'm thinking now maybe he's a little more in the latter category. So his greatness may have been diminished a little bit with me.
Me too. I was disappointed. I was like, oh, maybe he is just like kind of a bad hack, and the fact that Commando is so good is an accident.
Yeah, it's just a weird synergy of both he and Arnold kind of being unaware of how subversive they were actually being.
Great soundtrack, though. That Commando score is so good. I love it. All that timpani.
Yeah.
All the steel pan drums.
That was a great time in American filmmaking when they used that and soundtracks a lot. They used that in 48 Hours, too.
Yeah.
Like, so much.
I don't think
much.
Anyone can accidentally have Arnold feed a deer and not know what that image means.
Maybe. Maybe he hadn't fully committed to the act of, like, cinematic trolling at this point. Because, I don't know, watching Class of 1984, I kind of think that maybe he is trolling people a little bit, but it's based on Roller Boogie. I'm leaning the other direction now, so I'll have to have further studies.
Yeah,
for
you'll have to watch like a post-Commando movie to see if his trolling got even more apparent. Maybe Roller Boogie was too early in his career, and he was just trying to find his footing before he started making fun of everybody.
Maybe he just wasn't given anything to work with. I kind of feel like he was just given a bunch of people who could skate and not act in that movie.
You'll hear about the behind the scenes story when you listen to the Loose Cannons podcast about this movie.
Yeah, I can't wait now, actually. This is exciting.
It was a fun one.
And I have a surprise for you. One of the people who was discussing that movie really liked it.
I wouldn't say really liked it, but liked it.
Good one of the people.
Sort of.
It.
Maybe one of those people is even
didn't,
on this podcast
didn't,
right now.
I would say didn't hate it would be the more accurate description.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Anyway,
over.
You'll hear it on the next... You'll hear it all on the next podcast.
We got it all on Loose Cannons. Don't change that dial.
I'm gonna go ahead and denounce All the Real Girls by David Gordon Green. This movie is very well received, very critically acclaimed when it came out. I remember Ebert gave it 4 stars, which was a big deal to me back then because I really respected his opinion. And yet somehow I never saw the movie. Like, it came out, maybe I was just broke around that time, but so it was like a movie that always stuck with me as like, I should get around to that one day. And then now I did, and it's bad. I don't like it. Paul Schneider's a bad actor, and I mean, he's asked to do quite a lot in the movie, and he doesn't really carry it off, and I don't know. It feels a little bit like the thing that Mumblecore was an antidote to. Like, Mumblecore started around the same time and is all about super low stakes and just like regular people hanging out and kind of episodic slice of life ways. And All the Real Girls feels like the forced, like, fake Hollywood version of that. There's scenes that like sort of start abruptly and end abruptly, and that's supposed to be kind of impressionistic, but it all feels very worked over and nothing about it feels very natural. And it all like suddenly builds and builds and builds in this emotional way that's really unexpected given how like lackadaisical the beginning of the movie is, and then but then it ends on a like sort of anticlimactic moment, but it's all just like, it feels like they spent a lot of time on the script in a not great way. Like it's like a fake Raymond Carver via the South thing. No bueno.
Mm-hmm. No bueno.
Oh, that's also, Paul Schneider looks 40.
I've seen.
It's really weird because he's supposed to be like 22, and there's a part where he's like hanging out with Danny McBride and a couple other people, and he's like riding a BMX bike around it, and I was just like, you look like a 40-year-old dad riding a bike. Like, no one buys that you're like this young, like, layabout.
Anyway, he wrote the movie too, so
he did.
It's one of those, potentially one of those wish fulfillment scenarios as well.
Who he wishes he didn't look 40. I have no idea how old he actually was. He might have been only like 27, but
he was Mark Brandanowitz on Parks and Recreation.
Oh, right.
Name drop Paul Schneider like everyone should know who he is, but
yeah.
Huh. Well, he does. He has kind of like an old face. Mark Brandanowitz.
I was gonna say that your description of All the Real Girls fits the how I feel about the two David Gordon Green films I've seen. So
that's his career in a nutshell.
I guess so. He's made comedies since then, so maybe people like his comedies. I haven't seen any of them.
I saw Pineapple Express when it first came out. I guess I liked it better than this, but. Those are two different Basils comparing those movies, so it doesn't really count.
I watched Jupiter Ascending on the weekend, and it would definitely make the end of the year list, and it would be the
Which
expected
one. Though?
One. It would be the expected one, though.
Best of.
Yes. Best movie of all time.
Get out so, of here, yeah, Speed Racer. No. The Wachowskis have a new canonical film.
Once again, Wachowskis breaking our canon once again. Didn't like it. And didn't like it for the already well-documented reasons that I think even we've talked about on this podcast before. And many other people have written about before. Really didn't like the performances. And really thought nothing went anywhere where I felt like there were any emotional stakes that I was preparing to invest in. And I feel like Mila Kunis, as much as I like her, didn't act at all in that movie. Like, she was just hanging out, doing, like, her Mila Kunis stuff like she was on, like, Craig Ferguson's old show or whatever. Just like, hey, ain't this weird that I'm here?
Certainly could change in the next month, but right now she's in the lead for my least favorite female performance of the year.
Yeah. Too bad, Mila. Maybe, you know, maybe next time, but I kind of don't think so. I feel like she's a cool person, though. And more Russians becoming famous always pro that. But yeah, that's Jupiter Ascending for me. Big, big thumbs down. And Eddie Redmayne clearly also terrible. But yeah, everyone's already said that.
except Mitchell.
Yeah.
So I'm a little surprised that Basil chose that movie because it seems like he's watched a lot of Denouncements recently.
Was
that the worst one or just the one you most wanted to talk about?
It was just the one I saw most recently. I saw it last night, so I was like, oh. But yeah, I guess I have watched a lot of bad movies recently. It's been a rough month.
Selection bias is playing a role in that, I think. You've intentionally watched a lot of bad movies. Well, it's too bad I didn't go after Patrick, because then I could have segued nicely into saying... I'd like to herald a film that also might accidentally be good, or it maybe was purposefully, I don't know. It's called My Best Friend's Wedding. directed by P.J. Hogan. So this is my second time watching it. First time I thought it was fine, but this time there's a lot of stuff that I picked up on that I thought was more interesting, specifically the fact that the movie is extremely repetitive. Like, Joel noticed it early on that there's, like, you know, the emotional pull-in, camera pull-in moment, like, that usually happens maybe once or twice in the film, like, happens twice within the first 5 minutes of this film. And, you know, I didn't count, but I'm sure it happens more than that over the course of the film. Like, a romantic comedy normally has, like, one part where everybody sings, or where it feels like a necessary part of a romantic comedy where some people sing, but this one has three, maybe four parts where people sing. And I guess, like, I'm kind of torn between whether or not that's just, like, they didn't really know what to do, and so then they were just, you know, just doing the romantic comedy things just, like, over and over again to, like, make a full script, or if it's, like, satire, but I don't really care, because it kind of works in the way that it's just, like, it's kind of, like, not as intense, but it's kind of like Crank in the fact that it's just, like, so many of the expectations of romantic comedy, like, driven to, like, their extremes. And then I guess the thing that I find most interesting about it is that the actors, especially Cameron Diaz and Julia Roberts, end up grounding the film by the end of it. So it's kind of like you go through this weird, bizarre world, and but then end up with, like, some real humans at the end of it. And I really enjoyed it. I won't go as far as Basil to say that Julia Roberts is one of my favorite performances of all time, but probably one of my favorite performances of that year. Maybe my favorite performance of that year.
Nice.
Pretty good.
Yeah, speaking of the things that Ruben was talking about, there's a really early moment where, for basically no reason, like, Julia Roberts, like, lays back and just, like, falls onto the bed, and then it cuts to an overhead shot of her, and her hair is, like, perfectly splayed out in this, like, very obvious halo thing that makes me laugh every time I watch that movie.
I think my pull quote from Ruben's description of this movie will be kind of like Crank.
I was
Ruben Clay, quote by Ruben Clay. My best friend's wedding.
I was torn between comparing it to Crank or Once Upon a Time in the West, but I went with Crank. Because both are genre movies that are about turning up the
it's a funnier, more genre conventions. Example.
I mean, if you like Crank, you might also like My Best Friend's Wedding.
It was true for me and Basil. So,
well,
I haven't rewatched My Best Friend's Wedding in a while, but I like Crank, and I will probably like this. So we'll see.
That's a good
one. Certainly seems like it.
This podcast approves Crank, doesn't it?
I think,
Patrick,
so.
We got a 4 for 4 in Crank, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Thumbs up on Crank. Crank 2, I don't know as much, but Crank 1, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I thought Crank 2 was fine, but I think I really like Crank. Speaking of extreme action films, Mockingjay Part 2 was my pick, so I'll give the plot. It picks up where Part 1 left off, obviously. They've rescued PETA from the Capitol, but we now know that he was a plant because he's been turned against Katniss using brainwashing, tracker-jacker methods to hate her. So, you know, that's obviously causing some tension in District 13. He severely injures Katniss at the end of part one, so we start part two in the same place as part one, with Katniss in the hospital, sort of waking up from her injuries and trying to get through it. We get some PETA stuff at the beginning, and then Katniss's frustration with being stuck in District 13 kind of boils over, and she sneaks away after Annie and Finnick's wedding to the Capitol, because she wants to be part of the front lines. She and a group of characters we've mostly met before, Lieutenant Bags, Finnick, Gale, and then some new people go off on a mission to do more propagandas, but then as that mission goes badly, Katniss ends up taking it over to sort of have them go to the Capitol to find and assassinate President Snow, because she's decided that that's the last thing she wants to do with her life. But as they go through the Capitol and suffer losses, the mission becomes more and more meaningless until the point when they get to the Capitol and they're not able to get to President Snow before District 13 and the other districts are able to take the Capitol. And then there's some new government stuff afterwards, and Katniss betrays President Coin, and instead of assassinating President Snow like she was supposed to, she kills Coin, and then she is pardoned by the new president and lives out the rest of her days in District 12 with PETA.
The whole movie in a nutshell.
Yep.
Wikipedia should write that down word for word in the synopsis section.
Patrick, what did you think of this movie?
I liked it. I did have some reservations about it. I don't think I liked it quite as much as the one before it, but I definitely thought that there were plenty of moments where it managed to both sort of on the surface act like it was going through the motions of like a, you know, like fight the power Hollywood blockbuster, but then when you really break down what's happening, it's actually kind of subverting all of that stuff, and like you said, like as the mission goes along, you know, typically you want characters to, you know, hit their end goal and, you know, kill the bad guy or whatever. And I thought this one did a really good job of, like you said, making it more and more meaningless as it went along, to the point where it was like, you know, nothing was really what Katniss thought it was at the beginning. Like, it's all kind of changed at the end. And it did a nice little flip around, because usually you have the good guys and you have the bad guys, and, like, it's pretty clear who is who, but here it's definitely a much bigger moral gray area all the way around. And I liked that uncertainty, because it kind of added to the tension of, you know, like what's going to happen here. And especially not having read the books, I didn't really know how it was going to go down in the end, so I was kind of like nervous all the way through. I was like, oh, is this person going to live? Is, you know, is she going to, you know, make it? Is anybody going to make it? Yeah, I thought it did a good job of maintaining that tension right up to the end.
Basil?
Yeah, I think I more or less agree with Patrick. I would say I'm maybe even a little more ambivalent. Like, I feel like it sort of drops the meta-commentary aspect that was kind of my favorite part of part one. And as I sort of worried, having read the books, like, there are a few of the emotional moments that, because the movie hasn't really taken the time to develop those relationships, didn't land for me nearly in the same way that they did in the book. And, yeah, I don't know. Like, we'll get into more specifics, but I felt sort of on the fence for most of the movie, except for a few parts that I really, really liked, which we can talk about as we go.
Yeah. So, yeah. Continuing this trend, I would actually say that I didn't like it more than I liked it. Which was a little sad. I think I liked it just because of the fact that I liked the other movies, and not as much because of this one. I felt like a lot of the strengths of part one were the idea that they could, well, I don't know, I guess the quieter moments between some of the characters that are just more well developed and more interesting than most characters and franchises like this ever get to be. Whereas in this part, it seems like a lot of the subtleties and a lot of the interesting things about most of the characters just kind of went away. I felt like this was a thing that Ruben talked about a lot, which is Katniss's ambiguity as a character in the books, which in the movies is not as... She's more like the good guy with some faults or whatever in the movies. In this movie, it was like she had just turned into this unambiguously positive character who just got thrust into terrible situations but always managed to like make moral choices wherever she went. And a lot of other characters, like, I don't know, they just didn't matter as much anymore. Especially, like, I felt like a lot of characters were just introduced just to remind you of their existence in order for you to feel something vaguely about them later when they died, which I really didn't like. And I also felt like a lot of characters that, where I felt the Mockingjay Part 1 was walking an interesting line, or especially with President Kane. In this movie...
Coin,
sorry, yeah. This movie, it was like, she was almost framed in weird ways where she just seemed evil, like from the beginning, which I thought was also kind of a, you know, I don't know. So we can get into more specifics also later, but yeah, I'm afraid I didn't really like this movie.
I like this movie, but it is, I mean, what I like about this movie is all in the book. It didn't really, this is the one that I feel most, how Basil feels about most of the movies, which is that it's a trailer for the book. The things that I think are good about this movie are better in the book, and I mean, it's kind of like, it's such a good book that even not a particularly great translation of it still turns out to be a pretty decent movie, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, we could kind of see this coming from the beginning. Prim and Peeta, who are sort of the most important parts of Mockingjay, and like what happens with them, just got the short shrift over the films, and Finnick a little bit too, and so you just kind of lose those emotional moments, as Basil mentioned. I thought that, you know, when it came to Prim's death, that the way that they shot it and edited it actually was pretty good, but, you know, the combination of her not being a particularly great actress and us, you know, it's more in our heads, the being upset about it, because, like, you know, the two goals at the start of the books and the movies is Katniss wants to kill President Snow and she wants to save Prim. And it was always, you know, it's really upsetting and strange, especially for a young adult book, to have the books end with her not doing either of those things. You know, and so the movies retain that because they retain the plot, and so I still appreciate that, but it doesn't land quite as hard as it does in the books, obviously.
Yeah, I was gonna say early on in part two, there's a really, really long, like, circling tracking shot of Katniss hugging Prim, and it's to say goodbye because she thinks she's gonna die on this mission. But at the same time, I was like, oh, they're really holding this moment because they realize that Prim is sort of a non-entity in all these movies, and they need some way for us to connect to her so that we'll feel really bad later when she dies. And I was sort of resentful of that shot because I was like, this is too much work for one dumb shot to try and do, because I'm supposed to be devastated by that development, and I know I'm not going to be now.
Yes.
And I wasn't, but I agree with Ruben that they did the best they could in terms of shooting it, but it doesn't...
Yeah, it definitely didn't devastate me in the movie. I'm sure it's much clearer in the books, like the emotional trajectory of that, because I don't know, so much about that last kind of battle scene in the movie is like, I felt like it happened maybe a little too quickly, just because, you know, you only really get like one shot of Prim right before the explosion happens, and then it's just like, you don't really know what happened after that, because it's just like Katniss falls down and blacks out, and then she just wakes up in the hospital, and it's like, she's gone, or whatever, and it's like, okay, well, we didn't really get to, you know, say goodbye to that character at all at that point. And
I don't know. I mean, maybe because I read the books, that's kind of how I would want it to go. Like,
yeah, again,
certainly big Hollywood thing.
It's true. Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like so much of this movie is like that, though. So much of it doesn't actually feel like a big Hollywood movie. Like, you know, especially the part where Boggs dies, because I liked his character a lot, and then it's just like he gets blown up off screen, basically. And, you know, you don't even see
the explosion. He still gets his moment, though. But he's like,
yeah, he gets his
moment. Do your mission.
But it's
here's the
actually
Apollo.
That moment felt a little to me. Where Hunger Games was entering that
Phoenix
very
death, the best of the big deaths, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I would say that this movie really wouldn't normally consider it to be like, because I like it, the kind of movie that does this thing where a black character dies in order to help a white character along, but this was like so hard to not see that scene as exactly that. So I don't know.
Well, I was going
to
say,
if they had cast it right, it wouldn't be that, because Katniss is supposed to be multiracial.
True,
she's not white.
That's true. It's true also. But I don't know. I feel like they did a pretty good job of casting like multiracial across the spectrum of the people that are in the movie.
Yeah, it's also a diverse cast.
I kind of forgive the movie.
A lot of the main characters are white, which is frustrating.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
I mean, I actually felt like, I don't know, but a lot of this movie was kind of Hollywood-y, actually, I felt. Yeah. Like, a lot of the scenes, especially towards the end where, you know, they're fighting off all these dudes that, all the mutts, right, that look like the guys from The Descent or whatever. And they all having this fight scene, and then, like, Finnick gets his big hero moment. I remember reading the books, and I remember how, you know, also because Finnick is much more of an interesting character in the books than he is here. And although I like the actor here, I feel like his death was sort of painful. That did work, but it also was like, oh, right. And then, of course, because this scene is going on for so long, someone has to die, but it can't be Katniss, and it probably won't be Peeta, so it probably will be one of the other people. And, oh, well, I guess it's going to be Finnick. And then he gets the, you know, the death scream and the sad thing that, you know, and Katniss says Nightlock three times and throws the thing down and explodes. I don't know, like, all of that, like, I felt like the movie was, again, trying to reach for emotion that it didn't earn at that moment. And that's, for me, a lot of, like, a prototypical thing a Hollywood movie often does is it kills off a character and it, like, kind of forces you to feel something. Just because, well, it's death. It's grand, you know. It has to feel like something, and I didn't feel like it did.
Yeah, I said it was probably the big death that worked for me the best, but of all the death in the movie, the one that worked for me the best is when the guy goes through the like light and just like turns into like dust or whatever. I think it's the brother of the guy who can't speak.
Yeah,
like I don't know that really hurt me.
it may have been, or it may have been just. I thought that was just one of the other soldiers, because I thought the I'm trying to remember their names.
Pollux.
I thought he got killed by the mutts. I can't remember though. Is that not what was that not what happened in the books? I can't. I haven't read the books, so I don't know.
I don't remember the books well enough to know where each person died.
Yeah, and they're not really well-drawn-out characters anyway, so they're just, like, hanging out there with the rest.
Yep, the camera peeps.
But I will say that one of the things I liked about the way this movie, like, presented the traps and stuff, I thought that those were... They both seemed, like, really, like, practical killing things. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like in movies, when you see stuff like that done, it's like, oh, yeah, that maybe could have killed somebody, but it probably wouldn't have. But, like, here it's like somebody would have totally gotten annihilated by everything that they... And especially, like, the light thing where it's like, wow, they could kill somebody with light. Like, that's... It's just this, like, crazy kind of future technology that is... I think they do a good job of making it both, like, really practical, but both completely unreal also. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it fits into kind of that fantasy mold, I guess, because it's something that you could, that you can't really, like, figure out how it works physically at all. Especially the oil or the water or whatever it is, where it, mm-hmm. like, cuts people with wires too. It's like wire water. I was like, what is this? It's crazy. Like, insane future technology. And I liked that it did that thing where it actually made those look really cool and, like, really futuristic. And I don't know if the book describes them that way, but they did a really good job of presenting it visually in a way that made sense visually, but also, like, makes no sense based on, like, you know, current technology or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like, I mean, the obvious comparison point would be, like, the classic James Bond villain things, where it's like a laser that's slowly going to cut him in half. Yeah. Like, I don't know, instead they have, like, pretty intense flamethrowers or just, like, machine guns, where if it was, like, a group of soldiers walked into that, just, like, a bunch of those people would be dead because they got mowed down by machine guns. It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me to kind of jump back, the most Hollywood moment in the movie and kind of what keeps me from liking this more is when Katniss is realizing, I guess, the pointlessness of the mission. They're in the basement of the Tiger Lady, I guess. Mm-hmm. And PETA brings her back by saying, listing the names of, like, people who died and, like, talking about making their lives matter. And, like, I kind of feel like the books and, in general, the movies don't agree with what PETA is saying, but you get that push in. And, like, swelling music as PETA is like, you know, make their deaths matter. And I'm like, I kind of feel like a lot of what the books and in general the movies are saying is that you can't make deaths matter in war. Like, it's really just a lot of death, and it's the worst. And I feel like, you know, again, I guess the thing that I actually like most about this movie is I think they did a good job with, like, sort of slowly revealing why Gale is not that great a person.
Yeah.
Over the course of this film, and I feel like that's the type of thing that Gale believes is, like, mm-hmm. you know, let's use death to make a point. And sort of, again, like, the thing about the books and part of why Prim and PETA's situation is so tragic in the books, in my opinion, is that they're, like, the actually good people in them. Like, Prim is, like, the only person who's, like, really good, and PETA is, you know, good until he's forced to be bad by the Capitol.
Yeah, I did also think it was interesting that, I can't remember who says it, but somebody says that they wanted PETA instead of Katniss to be, like, the face of the revolution or whatever, because PETA was so good at doing the, like, PR stuff, like, doing the, you know, the speeches and whatever. And I thought that was an interesting twist. It was like, oh, we don't even, you know, we didn't even want you. We just got you because you just happened to be the one that, you know, stepped in the path of, you know, what we were going for. And PETA, you know, PETA got caught by the Capitol and you got left behind, so we just had to use you instead. And I also think it's interesting the scene where she's talking to Joanna about, you know, her being the Mockingjay, and Katniss says, "You should have been the Mockingjay." And she's like, "People don't like me, though." And I thought that was really funny. But again, it's like, I don't know, like a weirdo alternate universe where like Joanna is the Mockingjay and like she's just this like really crazy, unlikable leader to this rebellion who could actually like probably lead a rebellion, honestly. But I like that the movie like brings that up. I guess it's in the books too, but just like brings up those like what ifs, you know, what if something had gone like just a little bit differently, like what if they had gotten PETA instead of Katniss out of the dome in the
well, Katniss was the mission at that point. I don't remember the exact context which you're talking about, but I think they're going back to the beginning, like the very first Hunger Games, and like wishing that PETA had made a stand instead of Katniss.
Well,
yeah,
because at that point it's sort of like Katniss is like, because of the whole elderberries or whatever thing, is she kind of has to be the Mockingjay at that point.
I guess so. I just thought for whatever reason that it was.
I forget who says it too, but I think they mean that, like Plutarch had to convince Coin to rescue her instead of PETA, that Coin really wanted to rescue PETA, partly because she also thought that he was like the more malleable of the two that he could have.
That's what I thought they were saying.
Easier to convince of their mission, and that Katniss is more of a do her own thing, do her own way type of person.
It's said out loud in the movies, but it's conveyed more interest, I guess, subtly in the books, that Katniss just responds to the situation at hand. Like, she doesn't she doesn't make like a lot of plans, really, and it's like,
yeah, she's not a strategist.
She's just
definitely agree with what Ruben said earlier, with the fact that Gale and the way the movie shows him, like gradually reveals him to not be as maybe sympathetic as he was presented to be in the beginning, and also because a lot of this is from the perspective of Katniss, the way she starts seeing him, you know, and how her attitude towards him changes over, like she needs a while to kind of realize who he really is. But also I feel like the movie is smart enough to say that, well, maybe Gale would have been a better guy if a lot of really shitty things hadn't happened that turned him into this like kind of war and murder crazy person. So I feel like also his character might have actually, for me, was like one of the most surprisingly interesting parts of this movie. He was never, for me, a particularly interesting part of any of the other ones, but here, because he actually goes through kind of a transformation that, maybe actually remembering the books, Gale to me was just not as big of a deal in the books, and here he kind of, just by virtue of kind of things happening with him
I think one of my favorite scenes in this movie is him and PETA talking about wanting the other one to kill the other one or to die or whatever, so that, you know, they could end up with Katniss or whatever, and like the weird, sad, you know, masculinity of it all.
Yeah. Also, in the middle of like all this war going on and like all the crazy shit that's been happening, they're like, you know, still, what about love? What about like jealousy and male vanity? What about all that stuff?
Yeah.
I also kind of like that moment because I feel like the movie knew what it was doing. Like, it's not like the movie acted as if this romantic triangle was more important than anything else going on in the world.
Yeah.
But like, I felt like the movie was like, well, to these characters, they still have enough sort of, I guess, humanity left in them that they sort of still care about the littler things, and that they're still affected by stuff. Which was interesting, because a lot of the times it seems like this movie is so hell bent on moving the plot forward much more than like the previous one, that there's just not enough room to breathe for any of the characters to have like moments like this. So when it does happen, it's like, oh, right, these are actual human beings here with weird thoughts.
I also thought it was interesting the scene where they are like in that house and they're watching the video of the Capitol, like showing their deaths, basically like giving them the tribute salutes or whatever. And I was like, oh wow, some of these characters are actually watching their tribute salutes before they die. I was like, that's kind of a cold, interesting thing to put in the movie.
I was like, I missed this music.
Yeah. In general, with all the movies, I like how it presents other people interacting with media, I guess.
Yeah.
The general way to put it.
Yeah. And there was another part that I liked where the same scene where they're in that house where they're like taking the chocolates and eating them, and Gail's like, man, if I ate like this, I would probably want the, you know, Hunger Games to happen too or whatever. I was like, wow, that's it? That's all it takes to turn you? It's just some chocolate?
I mean,
well, Gail's the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's interesting because I'm not sure the movie really goes very far in that direction, but the fact, you know, that they were just like sitting around in this apartment in the Capitol and watching Capitol TV and like watching the tribute things and so on, it's kind of like the movie was just like, well, you know, so we've kind of moved full circle to Katniss and other people like watching this from the Capitol and like eating chocolate while they watch it and whatever. And it's just like, I don't, there's something there about how, you know,
yeah, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not sure it really goes too far in that direction to really say anything about it. But I don't know. In a way, movie maybe is suggesting something about how, you know, what maybe just even allowing for the perspective of how people from the Capitol must have felt like about these games, you know, like what Patrick mentioned earlier, that quote, it kind of dumbs down that whole idea, right? When what Gail says, but I'm not sure the movie just have enough room to allow for that also to happen, that you can get like the perspective of just some person in the Capitol and how they felt about whatever was going on, because most of them are just lumped in together as this mass of people who are just supporting kids getting killed. You know, you never really get a perspective from them.
Yeah, but it also, I don't know, kind of, you know, aligns the audience in a way with that, where it's like, yeah, you're just going to a movie watching people get killed, and you know, you know that there's yep. wars and
but the,
people dying.
The last movie
world,
did it better than this.
Yes,
one.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. But I mean, yeah, it's still making that point where it's like, yeah, you are, you know.
Basically, we're the Capitol.
In the same way, yeah, complicit in this sort of thing happening in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to Basil's analysis of Snowpiercer, which is the better version of the same point, but then again, it's only trying to make that one point as opposed to, like, Hunger Games, which I think is saying a lot of
yes.
things. Snowpiercer is really mm-hmm. kind of focused in on just, like, one or two points.
Yeah, again, I feel like maybe this should have been more movies than
yeah.
than how many it was.
It should have been a series, honestly. Like, I think they could have gotten a lot of mileage out of like a television series.
Especially the last book is so dense with action that it's really difficult to
hate television though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would have loved more movies, but I also think that a better director would have, you know, been able to still make something pretty good out of a whatever 4.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
The last book.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty tough because I think a lot of the moral ambiguity happens internally in the book because the books are told from first person perspective, and to try and make that external, like, I feel like it requires a really delicate touch that the movie's not really prepared to do, because it is very, like, the end of the book is pretty subtle in the way that it implicates Gail as possibly being complicit in murdering Prim and even Snow. Like, even though there's a lot of the same beats of Snow and Coin just being a version of Snow, I feel like Katniss's decision to murder her in public is a lot more unexpected and strange and sort of scary in the book than it ends up being in the movie, where it just feels like Ilya said, like she's like a super evil.
There are a lot of parts about that scene though that I like when PETA grabs the nightlock out of her hand, and also the way that like the mob of people comes up and murders Snow anyway.
I thought that President Snow got even more like evil and creepy after like they took him out of power. Like, he's the part where she sees him in the greenhouse where he's got the rose. I was just like, wow, he's creepier than he's ever been in this scene right here. Like,
that's actually my favorite Donald Sutherland performance of all time, is him in that terrarium, and like the way that he plays it. Like, he doesn't care in some sense that he's going to die or that he's out of power. Like, the fact that he figured out the game has brought him so much joy that he's not concerned about his imminent death. Like, he's like, oh, Coin was my real challenger, and she played me and Katniss against each other so she could take power, and I figured out the game. I lost, but I wasn't kept in the dark, and now I'm really happy about
real
that.
Real delighted.
Like, the weird happy way, the weird delighted way he, you know, like, lets Katniss in on it. It's like, it's not subtle. Donald Sutherland doesn't know how to be subtle, but I really like the choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's, yeah. And I like that scene where she does. I mean, yeah, you're right. It is telegraphed in the movie, like, that she's going to kill Coin. Like, I knew it. I hadn't read the books, and I was like, oh, yeah, she's totes going to kill Coin. Like, that's the only way that this could end at this point. Because, you know, she gets, like dead emotion Katniss face when she's like, yes. For Prim. It's like, yeah, she's dead emotion Katniss right now. Like, she's pragmatic Katniss. She's not, you know, she doesn't really care. Like, she's not doing this for Prim. Like, she's doing this, you know, for herself, or, you know, because it needs to be done, or I don't know. She's not saying yes for Prim, basically.
Yeah. She's
murdering Coin for Prim.
She's murdering Coin, but she's not voting yes for Prim.
Yeah,
as she says she is. Yeah, as she says she is.
Yeah, I feel like the way that... go ahead, Room.
Oh, I was just going to say another thing that I like about that scene, the scene where she executes Coin, is how made up she is. And a reminder of, like, the pomp and circumstance of the games, and how, you know, like, they're not able to do as good of a job in it because Jennifer Lawrence is, like, 24 years old, but... in the, you know, they do a pretty good job of it with Jennifer Lawrence's age concerns of, like, going back and forth between trying to make her look like a woman and her actually being a girl like she's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her, like, also in a weird way, Katniss really always knowing how to own the spotlight. Like, the way that she kills Coin, and you would think that also, well, wouldn't her guards or someone just retaliate somehow? But because Katniss is kind of has this way of knowing exactly what dramatic gesture to kind of pull off at the right time, she knows exactly how she's also protected by her celebrity, and also how she, you know, a thing like this, even though it's so personal to her, it's actually way more like a thing that ends up happening because, oh, well, this is an interesting twist to this thing that we were all expecting to happen on when we were watching this on TV. You know, she treats, like, even this moment where it's like an act of rebellion and an act of insurgency and subversion, it's actually just an act that is just another narrative beat on the way to another thing. You know, and Katniss just ends up being an actor in those
people
moments.
People in District 6 watching it with their popcorn and being like, ooh, that was a twist I wasn't expecting.
Katniss totally bringing it again. Will thought she couldn't do it anymore, but she sure can.
Yeah, what Basil was saying before about the internal stuff and the ending, I thought he was going to mention or get to the idea that, like, how sad the ending is and how they're not able to sort of land that in the film. Like, yeah. How the ending in the books is, like, about she ends up with PETA, she's able to experience real love, and she has a family, but that, like, basically that the war has ruined them and that they're just sort of hoping for better for the next generation. Like, that's kind of where the books end. And, like, one of the things that I think they could have done visually, and I guess I don't really understand why they cut it out of the movies, was have PETA not have his leg like he's supposed to, because he loses his leg at the end of the first books and then has a, you know, mechanical leg or whatever with a crutch.
That is, and, like, interesting.
That'd be a pretty obvious visual thing showing what the war did to them.
That's true, yeah. They really didn't. I felt like the ending was really rose-tinted, and I was really unsure if there was some other reading to that I was missing. But, yeah, I did think that it definitely deserved a darker ending, considering what most of the story has been about to this point. Like, I was definitely expecting more of, like, you know, like, oh, yeah, we're here, but, you know, District 12 still decimated. Like, they still firebombed it to the ground or whatever. And, like, I don't know. I definitely thought there was going to be something darker, but that was one of the points that I disliked about the movie, was that the ending was so rosy in the movie. Like, it was really just like, yay, yeah. Pete, yay.
Katniss, much as I generally like Jennifer Lawrence as an actress, her delivery of that final monologue or whatever does not really hit the points that monologue is supposed to convey whatsoever.
Yeah, and I
like that, it's almost like cheeky. She's like, "There are worse games to play." I'm like, that's not.
Not at all.
And I don't know, for some reason I think that's a directorial choice based on, you know, the imagery and everything that's going on around it. Like,
yeah,
that whole scene is weird.
But I think that would have been cool actually to, like, have it, like, shot in a way that's, like, very idyllic, and then have the voiceover be like, "Yeah, if you look beneath the surface, though, things are still fucked up."
Right, because that's, like, the whole myth of World War II, is that everyone came back and, like, what a great war, we beat the Nazis, but, like, all these people were just horribly ruined and, like, unable to process living back in the real world after what they saw, and that is exactly what the end of the book conveys, that, like, they got everything they ostensibly want, but it doesn't really matter when you've lived through what you've lived through, because there's no real way to process that kind of trauma.
We should remake the Hunger Games books as movies again, and this time we should cast the actress who played Rue as Katniss, because she's awesome.
Yeah, Amandla.
Yeah. She's the coolest.
I did a White House PSA with her.
Wow.
Is she cool in real life or just in social media?
I mean, she's... I didn't really talk to her that much.
Way to be diplomatic.
She seemed cool. I mean, you know.
Patrick is learning how to do this, how to play the Hollywood game.
I didn't, you know. Typically, you don't sit down and, like, have a conversation with people. You're just like, here's your microphone. Put it on. Do your lines sound good? Yeah, they sound good. That's it.
I thought the two of you would have an immediate connection. Well, sorry.
You should have just told her about our podcast.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a great icebreaker.
Come on our podcast, Amandla. Talking about how you were underused in the first Hunger Games.
That's right.
Get the inside scoop.
So do we want to, like, t- talk about, I guess, like the series as a whole, now that we've reached the final film. We've talked about almost all of them except for the first one.
We should do a makeup podcast for that one.
For the first one.
And then just do all of them again.
We should do what those guys who are watching Grown Ups do every week and doing a podcast about it too, is watch all of the Hunger Games movies every week and then do a podcast about it. overall, they're very good. I think as far as big franchises of the last, you know, that started in like the early 2000s, I guess, it's probably the best, and I can't think of one that's competitive with it.
Yeah.
Or the 2010s, I guess.
Even back to the 2000s.
When did the books first come out? I'm not really clear on that.
I don't know. Late 2000s, I think?
I think so, yeah.
I think 2000.
I know during the Iraq War, because Suzanne Collins has been quoted as saying that her sort of inspiration in some ways for the book was like channel surfing and like seeing like footage of the Iraq War and like reality television like being presented at the same time as like equivalent news stories.
Wow.
2008 was the first book.
Yeah. I mean Spider-Man 2 is better than any of these movies in my opinion, but as a whole, as a narrative arc from Spider-Man through Spider-Man 3, I don't think it achieves anywhere near like this does.
And also it's not going for as many difficult points, I think, as this one is. Yeah. I mean,
it's true.
The it's Spider-Man trilogy, I mean, not the second one.
Yeah.
No, I would say even the second one. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it has some really great stuff to say, but it's not about stuff as dense or as hard to discuss as, you know, trauma of war. So
yes,
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Not as deep and dark, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, Spider-Man 3 explores how what things happen once you. Like, kind of...
once you turn into sand.
Comb your hair to the side and dance to jazz music like a weirdo.
Yeah, but that's the best part of that movie.
By far the best part of that movie. Yeah. Which is why I highlighted
it. It's like Sam Raimi's big middle finger to them not letting him make the movies that he wanted to.
Yeah.
He's like, you want me to make a bland action hero movie? Well, I'm going to make the most anti-superhero movie of all time. With a long emo sequence.
Still about a sort of fun idea of, like, what happens when you buy into your own media image.
Yeah.
That I wish that explored more. It's like, I am cool. Look at me. Everybody likes me. Spider-Man.
I normally compare these movies and books to Harry Potter because it seems like they're going for a lot of similar things, and Harry Potter misses the mark on pretty much every single occasion, whereas the Hunger Games books nail it, and the movies are significantly better. They still miss the mark sometimes, but the movies are still even better than the Harry Potter books, which are bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't think of a good time to bring it up, but I do actually think that the way that Francis Lawrence handles suspense in this movie is really, really good. I feel like all the times, like, before a really big set piece happened, I was like, oh man, I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, those mutts are coming, but where are they coming from? And this is really scary to watch.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought a lot of the stuff in the sewer was really good just from a editing directorial standpoint.
Yeah.
In terms of just like,
I thought it was a good, it could have been like way too chaotic in terms of like telling where everybody was and who was living and dying. And I thought it actually did a good job of like giving me the geography of where everybody was in the scene and who was, you know, who was going to live and who was going to die, basically. Which is hard in that kind of setting, because it's like, you know, it's dark and they're basically only illuminated by flashlights.
I thought that archway scene did a really good job too, where it's like, you know that something is going to happen. Like, if you watch a lot of films, as soon as Natalie Dormer's character says, like, this is a perfect place to get a shot, it's like just such an obvious setup. But then when they find the machine guns, it kind of like, for people who don't know what's going to happen, they're like, oh, okay, they figured it out. They figured out the problem. And then, you know, two other things happen.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I thought that that was a well done scene as well in terms of that.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like maybe actually this movie would have been better if they had dropped the entire thing about the district, which I don't remember what it's called, but the one that they kind of cover with rocks, right, too? Yeah. And like force the people out of there. I feel like that whole sequence really did next to nothing for this movie in terms of developing anything other than, I guess, Katniss's resolve in wanting to like do whatever it takes, or I don't know. But actually even that, like they could have spent more time on them in the Capitol and like would have had maybe a kind of a better, I don't know, more chance to like also explore how this thing with PETA, which in the books I remember feeling so lost, as in like, when is PETA even gonna come back? Is he even gonna be normal again, or are they just gonna drag him around and then shoot him at some point because he's gonna flip? Like that whole thing was just kind of, I feel like, missing a little bit from the movie, and just, I don't know, they would have just been able to, we would have been able to spend more time with the characters, and maybe even, I don't know, would have been maybe more altogether satisfying, or, you know, satisfying just from a, not in the end, like, I feel great when this movie ends, but just, you know, would have maybe had more time to do all the things it's trying to do, which are a lot.
I do like that she delivers that big speech, and then the guy shoots her anyway, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you can't really change me with one speech.
Yes. Well, it's another guy that shoots her, right?
Yeah, I was going to say it's somebody else that shoots her, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you changed that.
Like she's delivering the speech to, like, the whole group of people.
Yeah.
Well, she changed
like
that one.
Everyone can hear.
She changed that one guy, but then the other guy shoots her. He's like, you didn't change me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like the scene where they bury two with the rocks, because that was kind of the beginning of, I think, Gale's transformation, where you start to see Gale transforming into being like, all right, he's the one who's the, like, you know, pragmatic barbarian at this point now. Mm.
That's such a good description.
Good one, yeah.
That's your nickname from now on the podcast.
Patrick the Pragmatic Barbarian.
Yeah, I don't want to lose that part. I do think that there's other hints from Gale earlier, one that I mentioned on the Catching Fire podcast, where he's like, we should run away together. And then she's like, no. And then later she's like, all right, let's run away together. And he's like, is PETA coming? She's like, yes. And he's like, well, I don't want to.
He is the worst.
But believably the worst.
Yeah.
I remember reading the books and I was like, man, I, you know, it seems like that she's going to end up with Gale and like, he's pretty cool in some ways. And then like, I'm reading the second book and I'm like, no, I like PETA better. Mm. And then like by the third book, I was like, ugh, Gale.
Yeah.
But yeah, the point you made earlier is a really good point. And I'm glad that the movie was able to do it a little bit of like being like, hey, you know, if we weren't in war, a lot of these people would probably just be like normal, decent people.
Yeah.
Gale wouldn't be the worst if it weren't for war.
Exactly.
He would just be like a handsome hunter, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Well, it's a bit sad to say goodbye to these movies. I've been enjoying them for the most part, and I hope we're able to find another Hollywood series that we want to do on the podcast besides, you know, Fast and Furious, so that we can keep doing stuff like this. But
yeah,
it's gonna go maybe we'll forever. All really love the Star Wars movie.
Star Wars, I was about to say. Yeah. Except
every other
that we totally don't love
them. I love rewatching A New Hope last night when I had to rewatch it. It was just, I loved it.
I was actually surprised. Yeah, I mean, I was wondering if you were going to bring that one up in the beginning. Alas, no.
No, I was deciding between two Heralds, so
yeah.
I didn't really want to denounce anything. The other one was Django Unchained, which pretty much almost all of my complaints about it the first time I watched it, I didn't really feel that way anymore. And so then I was just left with Jamie Foxx shooting a bunch of racist people, which is one of the more entertaining things I've watched.
Nice.
It's absurd how satisfying it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The part at the end when he's making the horse dance in front of the flaming plantation has to be like, it's kind of like, it's so great, especially when paired with Inglourious Basterds, because it's like, here's this whole treatise about how revenge is just awful and you're an awful person for wanting it, but here's this revenge scenario that's going to make you feel great anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a good movie. I like that
one. It really is.
Yeah, I assume that Ruben was talking about the fact that I watched Jersey Girl when he was surprised what I denounced.
Yes.
Oh, that old canonical classic.
Jersey Girl.
You sure did. Tell them why you watched Jersey Girl. It's a great story.
Oh, yeah. It was a game of Netflix chicken where...
Netflix chicken, what is that?
It was like we started talking about Jersey Girl somehow, and one of my roommates was like, no, it's actually a good movie, and Mitchell and I had never seen it, so we were like, is it now? And she's like, no, it's really good. And then,
is it
and then we started talking about Jersey Girl for a long time, and I was like, all right, well, I guess we should watch it. And they're like, well, is it on Netflix? And we're like, no, it's probably not on Netflix. I feel like we would have noticed if it was on Netflix. But then we looked it up and it was on Netflix. And at that point, we had no choice. We just watched Jersey Girl.
For some reason, I pictured you both like holding like glasses of wine. We were like, is it now?
It's pretty accurate. I drink a lot of wine.
Oh man, so
how would actual really Netflix chicken work? It's like you choose a bad movie and then
see who stops like, watching it first.
Yeah, maybe. Or I was thinking like someone could top your movie, but then if your movie is selected or something, you get, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just like
I'll think about it. I'll come up with Netflix chicken.
Yeah, I'm also thinking like
I dare you to watch this movie.
Yeah, it's more like I dare you to watch this bad movie, and you have to at some point say yes because the next one I will dare you to watch will be even worse than the one I previously suggested.
Well, yeah, I think it would be like you would trade. You'd be like, I dare you to watch this movie, and if
yeah,
I
but
watch,
the part know, is that there's no chicken it, part dare right me now. To watch.
Yeah,
right. There's no cliff. Like, this would be like chicken if there was just a long, you know, airplane landing strip. Like, who could drive the fastest but then you just keep driving faster. There's no point at which there's a threat at the end.
The element of chicken would be when one person gives up, maybe. Or like, someone's like, okay, I can't keep watching these bad movies, you win.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like, I would be willing to watch a movie as bad as blank, and then you're like, I would go one worse. I would watch a movie as bad as this. And then you're like, ugh, I don't want to watch a movie worse than that. Let's just watch this one.
Exactly, yeah. So, how was the situation with that friend of yours later? Was that?
I feel like Jersey Girl, you're jumping right to the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, pretty much. So
you're nuts.
Whoa!
Did she still think it was a good movie? Did you guys watch it together? Or
yeah, we all watched it together. She apologized and said that Jersey Girl wasn't good after all.
It's always great when it ends with an apology.
I felt bad that she didn't like it as much anymore. It'd be a fun opinion to be like, Jersey Girl's awesome, but it's a really bad movie. It's not good at all.
I was planning on doing something similar. I was planning on actually doing a mini podcast with a friend of mine who likes the movie White Chicks. So I actually, that was the reason that I watched White Chicks, because I wanted to do that mini podcast and just talk to her about why she liked the movie, and it never ended up happening, but I think it would have been an interesting podcast.
I also know someone who likes White Chicks. Maybe they should have a podcast together.
I would be more ready to believe that White Chicks is good than Jersey Girl, because at least White Chicks as a narrative idea involves reversing blackface. And therefore could have some sort of commentary at the base of it.
It is true. I do think there is maybe
I don't necessarily trust the Wayans to land that commentary.
That's true. They don't. there is a bit about there's a character played by Terry Crews who will like only date white women, and like he's more angry at the end when he finds out that one of them is not white than that they're a man. So I don't know. It's
like that's some like it hot joke.
Still kind of homophobic.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, but he's more upset that they're not white. He's like, you're not white. So I feel like there was some sort of commentary going on there, but it's lost.
Yeah, a Wayans level of commentary.
Yeah, it's lost in all the other shit that's happening. You're just like, but
I mean, I think if they wanted to make a commentary, they should have not mixed in the whole men dressing up as women thing. They should have just had two black women in whiteface, and then maybe they could make a commentary about it.
Right.
But when they're adding in cross-dressing, then it's all mixed up. And then, of course, you probably have transphobia in there and stuff like that. It's almost inescapable.
The
Wayans brothers at the helm.
Why are you already...
It's all inescapable. It's just a giant asteroid hurtling toward...
Were you already pursuing a very faint hope of this movie having anything interesting to say? Then this added element just gives it just an insurmountable obstacle.
It's like... trying to walk a lit candle back and forth in an enormous empty swimming pool.
Yeah.
Without it going out.
Seems like one of your favorite metaphors lately.
Did you use that on another podcast that I wasn't on?
I think so.
I sure did.
Yeah.
So I think it's on my rewatch list for next year. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, it's might be on mine as well. We'll call it the Nostalgia Cast, like last time. Except we'll actually watch Nostalgia.
Does anyone have anything else they would like to say about Mockingjay Part 2 or Hunger Games in general?
Or White Chicks.
Or White Chicks.
Or other Wayans movies.
Seen, but I feel very
or
comfortable
Kevin Smith.
Judging.
I still think that I agree with Ruben that these sequels this franchise was very satisfying on a lot of levels, and I would still think that, you know, Mockingjay Part 1 and Catching Fire are probably two of my favorite movies of the post-2000s, I guess, era. Really like both of them a lot. Yeah. And the other two are definitely movies that I would watch if I... Which never happens anymore, but I would watch if I happened to see them on TV. You know, I would not turn them off. For sure. So, yeah. Glad we did this. And after all, Mockingjay Part... Catching Fire was one of the oldest podcasts. This was a pre-Ilya podcast that you guys did. So,
I think it's... And a somewhat interesting note, if I remember correctly, that one also had very long discussions of things that had nothing to do with the movie.
Yes.
Or books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe about John Carpenter playing video games?
Yeah, or I think that was the that's Only Angels Have Wings.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that one, yeah, that one had a lengthy
discussion about something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it may have been about how much you dislike Harry Potter. Honestly, like, I think we went off on the Harry Potter tangent there.
Fair enough.
But that was the one where Basil coined the phrase
Harry Potter.
Where Basil coined the phrase. I think we nailed it, guys.
I'm pretty sure there was a long part where we were talking about young actresses that we found attractive, inspired by Jennifer Lawrence. That's pretty gross.
Boo.
Good job, us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that conversation, if it happened.
It was a while ago.
That was a while
ago.
Yeah,
me neither. I'm going to pretend it never happened.
I don't think that there's a recording of that anywhere. Delete, delete, delete.
I guess you can edit it out of this podcast as well. Although every time we say that, you don't do it.
Sometimes I do it.
Because I was listening to the one where Basil mentions messing up a film by burning it. You didn't edit that part out. It's up in there.
Messing up a film by burnt. Wait, what? Oh.
I ruined that print of School Days.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh well.
But I mean, like,
you know,
you didn't. Did you still even work? Do you still work at that place?
No.
No.
Well, now he doesn't work there anymore. Patrick, clearly,
but I'll
one has to do with the other.
Again, thanks to that.
So now you can edit that podcast and this one. I don't remember which one it was, though, because I've been listening to so many of them to get prepared for the
not going back to
the end of the year podcast.
I'm not doing that.
Oh, no, yeah, it was Paul Sheretz. That's why it came up. Yeah,
obviously. Oh, yeah, Sheretz.
Well, it's really cool. I said that then, and I agree.
Still looks cool.
Maybe you were just influenced by all the chemicals rushing to your brain. Should I wrap this up?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. You know, especially if you've joined us for all of the Hunger Games podcasts. We hope you enjoyed them and the movies. And if you haven't read the books, like Patrick hasn't, I recommend them. I don't really read that often, but I got into these pretty hard. And the last one was like a fever dream. Just reading it so quickly and so many awful things were happening.
Yeah.
So definitely read those books if you're not even an avid reader. I think they're worth checking out. And way more than I would expect from adult books, much less books aimed at teenagers.
It's true.
Please subscribe to us using your podcast subscription application. And give us a 5-star. Well, I would have said podcast. We are very crass on this podcast.
And in real life.
Subscriptions.
It's not just a persona we put on. We're not morning radio podcast hosts.
Hey, welcome back to Loose Cannons.
Your mom.
Well, we went through all the soundboard on that one.
We're playing all the hits.
No, no one used the rap air horn. Five-star review.
Great ending to this podcast, for sure.
We got a 5-star review from the UK. I already mentioned it, but it made me feel so good that I sent it to my parents.
Nice.
Nice.
That could awesome. Be you. Give me something to give thanks for. And I guess we'll see you, have you listen to us next time.
Bye. Good job. I think we nailed it, guys.